say?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah, yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this coop. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
With Rod Babers and Patrick Davis.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
Is there a problem back there?
HornFM.com and on the Horn app, The Horn, where Austin talks sports.
Welcome back to the Rodcast. We like to call it a freak flag, feel good, fake it till you make it. Ric Flair, woo! 512 Friday edition of the Rodcast. Thank you guys for joining us. Got a lot to get to on the show. More details about the EA Sports College Football video game. We have more player ratings that have come out. We now know who the highest rated player on defense is for the Longhorns. We'll get into that and talk some Texas football, of course. Also, there is a way too early Dane Brugler quarterback evaluation of Quinn Ewers that we'll get to, of course, here on the show. We'll also go behind the burnt orange curtain next segment. More trends that I've been observing in my deep dive of the SEC, some of their conceptual signatures, some of the conference outliers in the SEC with Texas transition. We'll talk about what I've discovered, and we'll also talk about how Texas can maximize and take advantage of some of those trends that I've discovered in the SEC. We'll get into that coming up next segment when we go behind the burnt orange curtain. We'll also get into some NFL news, notes, and nuggets. We got some Texans conversation. We've talked a lot of Cowboys. We'll get into some Texans conversation when we get into the second hour of the show. Also, there is a particular concept making a come in the NFL with a lot of Longhorn ties and affiliations. So I'll make the connection, and we'll get into some football theory in Rod's rant of the day. We also got your usual favorites. We've got what the facts, what the stats. We've got off the record. We got who said that. We got the topic for the big fat poll of the day. We already know what the musically themed day of the week is because it is a 512 Friday. So we got a lot planned for you on the show. But let's not waste any time. Before we do, let's introduce you to the rest of the crew, because he's one of the hardest working members of the ARN family. He's got a hustler spirit, period. I'm not sure what he's paid, but I'm pretty damn sure he's underpaid. Ain't no 401k for this hustler, and he's a hustle man of many talents. It's our friend, co-host, and neighbor. It's Patrick Davis, y'all. What's going on, Patrick? How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, always doing good on a Friday. Ready for the weekend. This is not the long weekend, so I think this is a more relaxed and chilled weekend than last weekend,
the holiday weekend
where you're going out and trying to enjoy as much of it as you could. I think this one maybe a little recovery weekend. Just get back in the flow of things, you know.
Super get us lazy, just sitting around doing nothing. A doing nothing weekend is my favorite kind of weekend now.
Plus,
prefer those weekends over the weekends where there's a lot going on and celebrating and like, yeah, I want to celebrate, but also would love to sit around and do nothing because all week I'm running around adulting and I don't want to do as much adulting on the weekend.
Exactly. Plus, we get the Rangers and Astros series this weekend before All-Star weekend.
There you go.
So that'll be a fun one to watch as well. Plenty of good stuff. More Vegas Summer League.
We got your
starts.
Rangers report, too, coming up. Forgot about that. Thank you for reminding me. Rangers report coming up in at 9 o'clock. Don't forget about that.
Yeah. We got Vegas Summer League starts. So you just watch Summer League basketball weekend.
There you go. I'm excited for you. Because you are one of the only humans I know that will actively watch.
You don't want to see the future of the NBA?
I think it is compelling, I'm sure, but I just like, man, that's a lot. That's a lot. That's a lot for me to. I got a lot. I got so much bandwidth, and I don't know if I can get into the summer league.
I think you have to have a team and a guy.
I have the Olympics this year, so I can't.
That's true.
I can't emotionally invest in other sports when I got the Olympics. I'm going to be emotionally invested in sports I care nothing about. So many of them in the Olympics that I can't do summer league because.
I just skip things like the ESPYs and then I have time for.
Oh, I've heard it's gotten it's just terrible now. I heard it's horrible. Yeah.
Was it good at one point?
I believe at least people thought it was like it was more relevant. I should say.
Okay, I can see
now
that.
It's like now nobody. I mean, I didn't realize it until I saw it on my timeline that it was even going on. So
I saw enough commercials for it that they kept saying like this is coming up in here. It's like we need to just scale back award shows overall. Scale back all award shows.
Think there are too many award shows?
There's
going
way,
on?
Way too many award shows. Way, way too many.
Well, between music and TV and film and, you can make that argument.
That basically every time someone goes, well, I didn't win that award and I thought I should. And they go, well, let's start a new award show. And we'll base it off of one person who maybe got slighted once. And then that'll be the basis for that one. And then we'll just do that. And then someone will get slighted in that one and they'll start a new award show.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why people. Yeah, you're right. They do have a lot of award shows. I don't watch many of them. The only award show I watch some of the Oscars and some of the Grammys, I guess. I watch some of that just because some of the performances may be really cool. But that's about it. I don't think I watch many award shows. I pretty much tune them out.
No, I'm not.
I tune all of them out, but yeah. I never watch it. To watch an entire award show from start to finish, now that's just. That's just lunacy. I don't understand.
Yeah, no, and I know, but I know
like,
people.
Get some of it, but it's like the whole thing. You're going to sit there and just watch the whole, like the entire Oscars? Like,
and I know
really?
People who.
Best screen editing and all
yes,
that?
Yes, exactly. No, I'm going to watch the one they do on the day before, too. You want to watch that one?
Yeah. I'm like, no, man. No. I'm like, I'm good. I'm good. I do. There's some I care about best picture. I care about best actor, actress. You know, there's some I really care about. I'm like, I got to tune in for those. But no, I'm not watching the whole thing. I'll DVR it and I'll just fast forward through the rest of it.
That's good. Yeah, no, I know people who watch just every award show.
I know.
Just love
the red
them.
Carpet too.
The red, they'll never
the whole thing. No, it's like an event for them. No, I can't do. But some people say that about us and games, right?
They do
watching out there. You can watch. Hold up. You mean you can watch a. Four, is it 3.5 hours? I guess about 3.5 hours of a football game. I'm going to sit around and watch every second of it. Might actually watch it and rewatch. I'm insane. Robbie will rewatch the three hour and then start tracking it. So trust me, everybody's got their own thing that they're into.
That's true.
Hours of sports.
That is true. I just, there's too many. You could probably say there's too many sports now, too. There's too much sports on TV, too.
You could make that argument, too. Yeah. But they want it live. Yeah.
But I prefer that, so I'll be.
This because they want live events, though. Live events is kind of the thing that's what all the networks do. They want something. That's why news is big because news is live. They sports live.
Yep.
They want more things that are live because everybody right now everything's appointment viewing and you just stream everything when you want it, and that's tough. That's why now they even make you watch commercials on your streaming. It used to be like you can stream it straight, and I was like, nah, we're gonna put a commercial in it now. Forget it. Hell with y'all.
$25 a month for you to skip commercials. Like, come on, man.
Exactly. You want to skip these commercials? Don't cost you extra.
You can't give me crack and then take it away.
That's exactly what they did. That's what they
just
did.
Rude.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I love it. Yeah, but no, I feel that. I understand it. I get it.
There you go. Let me introduce my co-host. He's a proud alumni of DBU. He's got more papers than Dunder Mifflin and watches more film than Siskel and Ebert. He is a new Rod, father of Austin Sports Radio, Mr. Rod Babers.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that intro as always. All right. Also, my man Patrick will always have the topic for the Big Fat Poll today. Looking forward to that. That's coming up a little bit later on in the 6 o'clock hour. All right. Let's start with the latest video game player ratings that were released. We were wondering. We had this conversation. We probably had it a couple of times. Who's going to be the highest rated defensive player?
Yes.
For Texas on the game. Now we know. It is actually two. They're tied for the highest rating on defense, and it's two transfers, Trey Moore and Andrew Makuba. They were both 89s on the game. So that says a lot about Texas. You know, their two highest rated players on the game are two guys they just brought in, Trey Moore and Andrew McCuba. The crazy thing is Trey Moore going to start?
Yeah, I figure he would.
Over who, Baron Sorrell or Ethan Burke?
I mean, I would.
Baron Sorrell's been there forever. He's a mainstay. He's been,
yeah.
You know, and now Ethan Burke is, I mean, ascending. I'm asking.
I mean, maybe Baron Sorrell. I'd probably put Ethan Burke in.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
My point is, you're deep there.
Exactly. It's a good problem.
You're very deep at the edge.
Yeah, but I didn't even thought about it. No.
I trust me, when I saw the brain, I was like, huh, so if he's your best defensive player, I'm just going off, obviously, the hypothetical, let's say that they've really done the research for the video game, which I do. They do some research, but some of it is, obviously, just for promotional and for entertainment purposes.
Yeah.
The thought exercise of, okay, then he's a starter. If he's a starter on the defensive line, 'cause he's the best edge rusher that you have and your best edge defender, then who's not starting on that defense? So I wonder if Baron Sorrell, I just wonder if it's a situational thing, matchup wise, or you just a true rotation of guys that it doesn't matter who starts because, hell, Trey Moore may end up playing more. It's like kind of basketball. Like, you know, you see that in basketball, I was like, oh, no, this guy starts, but no, that sixth man, he actually plays more and he closes.
Yeah, exactly.
In there in the fourth quarter. Like, it's going to be that. Like, honestly, it may be that.
It may be who's ever playing well at the time, yeah.
It could, that's exactly it. It could be a hot hand thing. You're like, you know what? Nah, man, this dude, he just matches up well with this guy. He's whipping him all day. Let's let him go. Or it may be, you know, so like I said, more, I don't know why basketball seems to be coming to mind, but, you know, sometimes you got a guy, he's just a closer. And he may be actually a guy that comes off the bench, but he's a guy that in the fourth quarter, he's one of your guys that you have in clutch time. That may be Trey Moore. It ends up playing more than the guy who's a starter.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how they're going to do it. It's a first world problem. It's a beautiful problem to have.
No, and I mean, it could be, you know, whatever move your guy has that the defender is just having a problem with, that the left tackle, right tackle, wherever you're putting him, that guy can't beat that spin move, or he can't beat that the burst off the ball, or whatever it is. That, you know, if you have that guy, and whether it's, you know, a Vasek or a Colin Simmons, too, who are going to be fighting for playing time.
In rotation, yeah. Justice Finkley.
All those guys, if they're fighting for playing time and all of a sudden they're having success on a left tackle or right tackle, do you say, all right, so keep riding the hot hand and keep keeping those guys in on important downs.
I don't know how they're going to do it. That's probably one. You know what? That'd be one of my first questions at Big 12 Media Day.
SEC.
I apologize.
No, you're good. We can be happy about it, you know.
Yeah, I gotta get used to it.
It just means more.
Yeah,
right?
At Media Days, that'll be one of my first questions is, yeah, what do you do about, what's the plan on the rotation at the edge position? Is it, you know, are we starting off with, is it based on early on in the game there'll be a different, you know, style of play because maybe teams will be establishing a run. You got better guys who are more equipped to be edge defenders against the run, or at least more effective against the run.
Yeah.
And then Trey Moore is a guy who's actually a little bit undersized, and that maybe later on in the game, in the fourth quarter, when your opponent's a bit worn out and they, you know, those legs are tired, that he's a guy that's a bit fresher in the second half, can provide some, you know, some explosion off the edge, and maybe Texas has a lead by then because you get that Sark run, which we've seen, you know, traditionally, you know, Texas gets a lead. Unfortunately, Texas sometimes loses that lead, and it ends up being a little too close to call in the fourth quarter, but he's a guy that if you do have a lead and your opponent has abandoned the run, which we saw against TCU, U of H, K-State last season, and that is the case, he's a guy that when they're in a predictable passing situation, he may have more success than your guys did last season getting off the edge and making those splash plays, those forcing those negative plays, because he's a guy who had double-digit sacks. He's a natural – he's your best natural pass rusher on campus right now.
Yeah.
But I wonder how equipped he is to handle the run – in the SEC, which is a line of scrimmage league, which teams are going to be establishing early on in the game. But maybe if your recipe works and you do have a lead in the second half, of these games, maybe he's your guy that helps you close because he's, like I said, your best natural pass rusher. You may have other guys who are, like I said, better equipped to stop the run.
Yeah. Run defense. No, I think, and I mean, you may have guys that you're trying to train specifically for those kind of specialties of, you know, we're putting you in because we think you're better at the run, so stop the run. We're not as worried about your pass rushing.
Yeah, exactly. Situational, matchup-based. I don't know how they're going to do it, but that's a good problem to have. Okay, so Trey Moore is an 89. Andrew Makuba is an 89. And Makuba, remember, Makuba, I mean, I assume it's going to be him starting and Derek Williams starting. I like Taff Daddy, but I assume Taff Daddy's going to be one of the guys rotating. But I don't know if that's going to be the case early on in the season. They may start, because I believe Taff started the spring game, if I'm not mistaken. They may start with Taff Daddy just because he's more familiar with the system, knows the system, until Andrew Makuba can get more, you know, better acquainted with it and get more comfortable in it. Or maybe he doesn't need time. I mean, he is a veteran. This guy's been playing a lot. He's played a lot of college football. So I don't know how they're going to do the safety rotation, but that's also a really good problem to have because essentially they've got three guys that are capable of starting.
Yeah, and we know they rotated safeties a lot last year.
Probably a little too much for me.
Yeah.
Probably just a little too much.
I like them to
have their frontline starters play maybe 15 more percent of the snaps.
Yes. No, yeah. I can tell you Jalen Catalon did not like how much they rotated him.
No, but he couldn't stay healthy, so he had.
He could not.
He could stay healthy, but you know, I didn't rotate when I played. I mean, it's a different era though. They play against spread systems, so they play against more play. I mean, I get it, but I do think they rotate too much. Even if you're going to rotate, don't do wholesale. I've talked about this. Don't do wholesale changes. They would rotate an entirely new secondary in, and an entirely new, you know, defensive front at times when they would rotate guys. I wouldn't do that. I would more, you know, I would piecemeal it and I would do different lineups with some of your frontline starters in there, try to sprinkle in the rotational players instead of just, because I do think opposing offensive coordinators, when they see you put in an entirely new lineup, and I'm not saying those guys aren't good, but there's a reason your frontline starters are your starters.
Yep.
When you put in the entirely new secondary, if I'm a play caller, I'd save some special plays specifically for that group because, like I said, they're more susceptible, or my plays would, you know, most likely be more effective versus that group than the frontline starters. So yeah. I would, if I'm them, I would do different lineups, like just try to sprinkle in the other guys rather than.
No.
And then you would make it tougher on the opponent rather than they have to find someone to pick on. Rather than just saying, all right, you know what, we can go up-tempo now and let's go hurry up offense and let's go basing into our kind of two-minute drill and really put pressure on these younger guys.
No, and I mean, and now again, when you talk about that inset headset communication, it makes it easier for a coach to communicate that to a quarterback.
Oh, great point.
That instead of having to call the plays on the sideline, you're trying to let him know without letting the other team know what you're doing. Or send the signal. You just tell them and go, "Hey, do you see what I see? Second team's out there. We're not no huddle. Hey, you know that thing we ran in practice? We had the Texas substitutes too much package. We had that package ready. Run that next. We those are play eight plays are scripted. We're going just take it downfield. You read it. We got mismatches. We're ready to go.
Yeah. No, and Caleb DeBoer did it. He did it in the Washington game.
Yeah.
That was a fourth down where he converted, waiting on Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy be rotated out. And when they were rotated out, he went for it. I guarantee if they were in, he probably would have decided to punt the football. So, Coach, I mean, that's just smart. I mean, that's just strategic.
No, we saw it in times where teams would hurry up when Tavondre and Byron Murphy were on the sideline because they would see him on the sideline and go, "Do not let them back in the game." It's a distinct advantage for us that two guys that are top picks in the draft are now sitting on the bench. Don't let them back in, and we'll be fine. We could run the ball 10 times in a row. Because we just took out two of the best players.
Yep, no doubt. Totally agree. So, so I think that's actually on both of those positions. You have first world problems.
Yeah.
Just about who's going to end up rotating, how you're going to determine those rotations and those reps. They have Malik Muhammad essentially here as the third highest rated player on the game at 87 for Malik Muhammad defensively, from defense here, and 87. Then Anthony Hilton, 86. So Malik Muhammad getting a lot of love. He should. Yeah. Malik Muhammad's a really good player. He really is. I mean, he's definitely your best cover corner or best coverage player, coverage defender. There's no doubt about that. And this year he could be potentially an all-conference player if he takes that leap, and a lot of people believe that he will. So that's your the best players on defense, Anthony Hill. He believes he believes his rating is too low. Everybody believes their rating is too low in the game, but he actually put it out there on Twitter.
I can see why he's one of those guys I kind of don't mind, because I feel like he may have that dog in him to be like, no, I'm gonna go prove you wrong.
Yeah, man. Hey, man, they got the updates. The updates are for.
Exactly.
You're all good. It ain't where you start. It's where you finish.
Yep.
But those are the best players on defense. Getting to offense, we talked about Quinn Ewers. Quinn Ewers, we already got into him and his rating. Six receivers, though. We know Sark is obsessed with speed. Josh Paterville, six receivers have a speed score of 92 or higher. So you got a lot of speed on the field.
Yeah.
Isaiah Bond is the 88 overall. Silas Bolden and Matthew Golden are 86 is overall. C.J. Baxter's an 87. It's pretty damn good for C.J. Baxter. But, yeah, I mean, you got a lot of speed. I wonder what Jaden Blue's speed is. Jaden Blue's speed got to be – I mean, Jaden Blue is probably one of your fastest guys, just clock in game speed. I wonder what his speed is, because they said six receivers have a speed score of 92 or higher. So that's got to be Golden, Bolden, Bond. Got to be DeAndre Moore's in there, Cook's in there.
Yeah.
And then Ringo. Am I missing? No, actually, they may put Niblett in there, maybe. He's fast, too. I don't know. Yeah, but Ringo's fast. I don't know who the six are.
Yeah, but Ringo, as a freshman, they may be moving.
Because he's a five-star. So I think they would give him extra love.
But they may put him like an 89 because they're not counting. They don't have college game speed yet.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just guessing.
I know they show special attention to the five stars and stuff like that. I know that's a thing. So there you go. That's interesting six receivers with a speed score of 92 high, but they know Sark's obsessed with speed. We all know that.
I was a little surprised at how high Golden and Bolden were, how high rated those were.
Yeah, they really like Golden and Bolden.
I think they're both going to be really good, but
– yeah. Bolden, Bolden's highlights. Have you watched some of Bolden's highlights?
I watch his highlights, but yeah.
He's impressed. He's small, though. He is a small dude. Like, I've met him in person. He's got that dog in him, but he is small. And Matthew Golden, obviously, he scored two touchdowns against Texas. So, yeah, you're probably right about that. Matthew Golden, Silas Bolden, I'm not surprised because I saw what he did at Oregon State. Maybe Matthew Golden, but they really like him.
No, and that's the thing. I like both those guys. I'm curious to see what they do in the SEC. I'm curious what everybody does in the SEC. But those two guys at that level of play, what they do there, I'm just – because they, you know, no offense to Houston, but Houston's not that school. So Golden was going to excel and be one of the best there. And Bolden at Oregon State. It's good. So they could.
Oh, yeah.
They both easily could.
It's a
level up. So I was a little surprised they gave him that much love. But good. I mean – as a Texas fan, that's a positive thing.
C.J. Baxter, man, he got 87. So essentially,
I think that may be on the look at where we can't give them a low rating at running back. They're just producing running backs at a high level at Texas right now. So
that's true. You're right. That position group period is just you're right about that. They just assume because of the lineage now. It's like all right, they had Rojo, they had Bijan, and they had Jonathan Brooks, and hell, they've had two running backs drafted in each of the last two drafts. Because they had Keelan Robinson drafted. Yeah. He's technically a running back. I know he was drafted for special teams, kickoff return, but still technically a running back.
Tashard Choice also claims Jahmyr Gibbs.
Yeah, that's true. He can. Yeah, he can play. Came into so he, yeah. In one draft, he had the two top draft picks at running back at that same position. Yeah, the two first rounders, and then the next season, if Jonathan Brooks doesn't get hurt, I mean, he wins the Doak Walker Award.
Yeah,
he would have back to back Doak Walker Award winners if Jonathan Brooks doesn't get hurt too. I believe. I know Ali Gordon was also in it, but I think Jonathan Brooks was on the better pace at the time we got the injury. We know that the highest rated player for Texas in the game is Kelvin Banks. Quinn Ewers is a 92 overall. I think he was ranked, 27th or something like that. Kelvin Banks was 13th overall in the game. All right, so those, that's basically, that's it. Oh, actually, no, I take that back. Arch Manning. Arch, his score was revealed, his rating was revealed, and it's an 87. Remember what I said. I said, don't put it fewer than 5 points, ratings points behind Quinn, because if you do, people are just gonna put in Arch. If you make Quinn at a 92 and you made him 89, people just gonna put him in. They'll be like, oh man, the difference is negligible.
People are still gonna put him in.
Well, at least the 87 of key, like, man, five ratings points, that's a big difference. That's a significant difference. So people, they may decide now, but if they made it closer than that, oh, man, everybody would have been throwing him in there. They'll still put him out in the transfer portal, I'm sure, and he'll be starting, because I believe his rating is higher than a lot of starters
at
the 87.
Has to be.
I want to say somebody said it's higher than Will Howard. I had to look up Will Howard's rating.
I mean,
and Will Howard may end up starting for Ohio State.
Yeah,
I got to go look at the rating, but someone said it was higher. I got to go check it out. I don't know all the other schools.
I don't think everything's been released yet. I don't think.
No, it hasn't. They just for the big. I think for the big schools, the big time schools. I do know that a lot of people are upset because like the loading screen.
Yeah, I
for
saw
the
that.
Game.
Why?
You saw that?
I saw that.
I mean, well, it's the people that are on the cover of the game.
Yeah.
You can't get. But it starts off with. I mean, it is a big. Kind of long shot of Quinn Ewers, talking to the screen, throwing up the hook 'em horn sign, and I think he's like the first image you see in the loading screen for it. And then they show the other players, and they show Travis Hunter walking down, and they show the Michigan player too. So I don't know if people are upset, but I would say Texas probably got more love in the loading screen than images than any other player. So people were upset about that. They didn't like it. They're like, I got to look at this loading screen forever. Like, yeah, man, it's a loading screen. It's okay. I'm just telling you folks, that's why the hatred, it's coming. It's coming. Well, it's already here. All right, we'll save the Quinn Ewers evaluation because Dane Brugler did a Quinn Ewers eval in the New York Times, actually. And I saw it. We'll give you some of the tidbits from it. Remember, we had the Daniel Jeremiah eval, was that earlier this week, where he had that for NFL.com. They're way too early evaluations for the 2025 draft. He made a player comp to Quinn Ewers that a lot of people took offense to, which I don't think is accurate. I didn't think anything of it because it was kind of a weird. I don't even know if it was lazy. It was just a strange comparison that I just didn't think was. Applicable. I just didn't think it applied at all. He compared him to Baker Mayfield, and it may have been looking at something else, like something specifically the mechanics, and even the mechanics to me and the throwing motion, none of it really matches up with Baker Mayfield. Definitely not personality. I mean, in temperament and disposition.
No, it is a solid way to piss off Sooners and Longhorns at the same time.
That may have been it. It may have been just a straight troll job. He's like, you know what, man, I need some love and a straight troll job because, yeah. And so, I'll read that to you a little bit later on because I don't know why he did it because actually Dan Jeremiah usually does great work. It was a weird player comp, Quinn Ewers to Baker Mayfield. You're right. It could be it. Could be straight trolling. It is brilliant because we brought it up on the show. He got us.
You got us.
Damn it, Daniel Jeremiah. Smart move. He's like, they'll talk about it on all their shows, how stupid I am for making the Baker Mayfield comparison. It's like, that actually is brilliant. Damn. All right, there you go. All right, so we come back. We'll get into that. But also, I want to start talking about these trends I've noticed in the SEC. So we'll look at the most successful third down passing concepts in the SEC and which one of those, how many of those passing concepts have similar staples within Sark's offense. And then we'll look at the success rate of those concepts in the SEC, those third down passing concepts, and then we'll look and see if Texas has success rates that are similar, that are better, that are worse, and looking at their transition to the SEC, will their staple of plays on money downs will they actually translate to the SEC? I think so. But I'll give you some examples of that when we come back. We'll get into that. But also the Quinn Ewers eval, lots of Longhorn football discussion on the other side right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis on Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the Horn.
And they were all asking themselves the same question. What is behind that curtain?
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get into some Texas football conversation. Okay, so the Daniel Jeremiah article where he's evaluating Quinn Ewers for NFL.com. And like I said, Daniel Jeremiah does great work. We refer to him all the time during draft season. He wrote this piece, and we read some of the excerpts when he talked about where he needs to improve and what he liked about Quinn and his biggest takeaway from watching film. I did not read the part where he said he reminds me of. This is the section that's kind of blown up because it wasn't. I thought it was a bit ludicrous, so I was like, I'm just tossing that aside. I don't even want to get into that because that'll become the main topic of conversation, and I want to talk about Quinn Ewers' evaluation, not the player comp, which is the salacious kind of way to rope folks in. And so his player comp, I'll just read what he said here. He said, I couldn't come up with a perfect comp for Ewers after studying the three games. The first name that popped into my head was a throwback to my younger days as a scout, Kevin Cobb. I remember from went to U of H, I believe, right? Ended up being drafted by the Eagles, if I'm not mistaken. Something about Ewers' delivery and play style evoked that old school name. However, the more game tape I watched, the more I thought of Baker Mayfield. Both guys have a quick twitch in everything they do, seeing the field, setting up in the pocket, and delivering the ball. There's a moxie and playmaking skill set to build around with both guys. Mayfield has really blossomed in Tampa Bay after bouncing around the league for the past few years. I don't think Ewers is quite as polished as Mayfield was at the same point in his college career, but I do see similar upside and potential. I don't really see it. I don't really see it at all. And I like Baker, actually. I think that. You know, Baker's more of a grip it and rip it guy. Like, I see him actually rip it and put a lot of effort into throwing the football at times. If anything, Quinn Ewers' delivery is described as, like, it's almost effortless. Like, he doesn't seem to strain or put that's what's really more remarkable about his. It almost seems lackadaisical at times. That's the criticism. Is that, you know, his golden arm saves him because it's a bit lackadaisical and not refined, because if he did, it would marry with the footwork and then it would be more of a motion. But for him, his arm is so amazing that he still can make every throw on a football field and even do it with those, like I said, almost effortless, lackadaisical mechanics at times. And Baker didn't really have that, in my opinion. Baker was more deliberate in his mechanics and his throwing in the rhythm that he threw. And I think that's kind of the special thing about Quinn. It's like, man, when he does put it together, it's going to be amazing. But I never really see Quinn kind of rip it like that. Like I see Baker do it sometimes. The player comp is tough, though. I think Jared Goff was a good one. I saw some folks throw Jared Goff out there. That's not a bad one. I like the Jared Goff comparison. I don't know if people remember Blaine Gabbert back in the day. I don't know why I see some Blaine Gabbert just in his release and delivery. And Blaine Gabbert was drafted in the first round back in the day, but never really worked out into being kind of a disappointment in the NFL. But I see some of that in there. There's some people who throw out the Matt Stafford comparison. I think Matt Stafford, like I said, I see Matt Stafford rip it a little bit more. And with intentional, more deliberate footwork that is, you know, aligned with his mechanics. And like I said, that's the thing about Quinn you don't see. So maybe they're looking at Quinn moving forward and what he could be. And then maybe then you probably could get a Matt Stafford. I like the Jared Goff comparison because Jared Goff, there are times where he can put a lot of velocity on it, but his arm is so – he's got so much arm talent that he doesn't really need to. And at times doesn't doesn't because he doesn't have to. And that's how Quinn is. I mean, Quinn puts just enough on it that what he needs to. I still don't think I've seen Quinn. There's a couple of times where he's outside the pocket and he's scrambling and he's making a throw like to A.D. Mitchell, like in the back of the end zone something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've seen him just put all of the velo on it, like everything he's got on it. But most of the time I love him because he's a touchback. That's why he's great in the intermediate passing, not necessarily in the deep ball, which he's getting better at, but in intermediate, he's amazing because intermediate is mostly touch.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, how much touch can you put on it? Sometimes you got to put a lot on it, but it's mostly touch. I got to get it over a linebacker. I got to drop it in the bucket, over the linebacker, in between the safety. I got to get it in the seam. So I got to get it around the, basically like around the head of that linebacker, drop it right over his head in coverage. So there's a lot of touch involved in the intermediate area of the field. And with in deep, it's just kind of ripping. Even sometimes with the quick game, it's just like even with the RPO, you're just throwing from a different platform. You don't even know how you're going to throw sometimes and where your passing lane is going to be. You just know where the receiver is supposed to be, and you're just ripping it right out of that mesh point. You're just coming out and it's coming out as fast as you can to get it there. Even sometimes there, you're putting more on it than you are in the intermediate game. Because, like I said, there's more touch involved there. So I don't know if there's an accurate player comp for Quinn. I think he is pretty unique in that. I'll give Daniel Jeremiah that. I don't have an accurate player come for him.
No,
it's
I mean,
one that just stands out.
And I think there's also that world of what we're hoping Quinn is this year is where we're trying to put the player comp, as opposed to putting it if he went out of the draft, if he was in the draft this year, if he had left and not stayed. Then I think that player comp is different than what we're going to try and put him with, because that player comp is not necessarily as good.
Yeah, no, which it is. I mean, I don't really have one, but he does have a generational arm. He has had a great. I think when you make compare, people bring up Matt Stafford and bringing up Jared Goff, those guys who were drafted number one overall. Why? Arm talent.
Yeah,
I mean, just superb arm talent. Quinn Ewers certainly has superb arm talent. Player-wise, like I said, it is tough. Because in his physical frame, too, a lot of those guys are thicker than I'm thinking about, too. The quarterbacks, I think they're a little thicker than him.
Yeah.
He's a little, I'm not saying slight, but he's not the biggest quarterback, upper body-wise or lower body-wise. And I think that's actually something he's gained some weight. Over the years trying
to. Yeah, because he lost all the weight before last year, and then now he's trying to put on muscle and put on good weight.
Yeah, because nobody wants a quarterback that's light in the butt. You don't.
No. And I mean,
Tua put on some weight. They were like, no, I need you to be more sturdy, man. You got to be sturdy in the pocket.
Well, apparently Tua lost a bunch of weight this offseason.
He lost it, and like I said, I don't know if I like that. I think I want you, because he was healthier, right, when he's a little heavier?
Yeah.
Was I not mistaken? Like that was, but it's more the system. I understand that's not really. And him learning, was it judo? Was it judo or taekwondo?
Yeah, it's all
one of the martial arts.
Yeah,
he learned
it's every quarterback trying to figure out the way to stay on the field and still be able to play at a high level for the entire game. So not put on too much weight that you're kind of getting bogged down and slowed down by it, but also be able to take a hit just any of that.
And I think keep on ticking.
And that's where Quinn lost all that weight, because he was going, I was too slow. So he lost some weight. So he got a little bit quicker and faster and felt better. And now he's okay. But now I got to put on weight because everything hurt more last year.
Yeah. And you're right. And Tua lost, like, he said he lost like 25 pounds.
No, yeah, because I remember watching the Dolphins. They were doing clips of them at the voluntary workouts, and all the players were talking about how they don't like skinny Tua.
No, you don't want a skinny quarterback. You want your quarterback to actually have a little junk in the trunk. You want your quarterback to be built a little thick.
Yeah,
have a little thickness to him. That's just, I think I'm with you. I don't know. In your mind, it makes you think there's more stability. They're more stable, so they can avoid injury more. Durability. And honestly, Quinn's a little light, and durability is an issue.
Yep.
Sam dealt with the injuries too.
Apparently that's a new trend, is because we know Lamar Jackson said he lost weight.
Yes, he did. He said he wanted to be lighter. And that's scary because you're right. He lost some weight. I remember that. Yeah.
So I don't know if that's a new trend that guys are trying to get lighter now. We know Patrick Mahomes is not following that, and he's
he's got that dad bod working. He doesn't care. I think didn't he win best male athlete of the year at the ESPYs?
I don't know why I would know that. I don't know.
Look at Josh. He's like, I don't know, and I'm not looking it up. I'm not even gonna grab my phone and look it up. Not doing it. You're right about that. It's Patrick Mahomes. He does. He defies a lot of the traditional views and perceptions of the elite athlete. Because you see him with his shirt off, you go, there's like no definition at all. No. And I know he works hard. You know he's in great shape. I mean, he has to be.
Yeah.
But like, there's no definition to the upper body.
He's got that in season body where it's like, especially in baseball and basketball, because they travel so much, that you'll see like the body everybody has going into the season. They're super lean and cut. And by the end of the season, it's not, because you're on the road all the time. So you're just eating room service at 2 a.m. And you're doing so like you just your body's not the same at the end of the season as it is at the beginning.
That's true, but his body looks like that.
But that's my point is Patrick Mahomes has end of season body at the beginning of the season.
Okay, yeah. I got you. He's got end of season body all the time. Yes, I agree with you. You're right. No, it's remarkable because like I said, I've seen him play in person and he's the best. He's actually one of the best athletes out there. He's not just quarterback. He's like a great athlete out there with the way that he can avoid sacks and extend plays. But, yeah, you see him with his shirt off, and you feel ashamed of yourself. You got this, you're all yoked up. You've been working out in the weight room. And I'm sure he does his own stuff, too.
Yeah.
But you're all cut up, and you're like, that dude with the – I mean, it's a elite dad bod. I mean, it's next level. Like you said, it's – there's no definition or anything to it, but he'll go out there and carve your heart out with a spoon. And you'll just be left there like, that dude? Yes, that dude. But getting back to Quinn. So let's read the Dane Brugler evaluation of Quinn, because we just talked about Daniel Jeremiah. So here's what Dane Brugler had to say. And I got this from – he did this in the New York Times. So I guess he was just doing some stuff for the New York Times. Usually you find Dane Brugler stuff at The Athletic, I believe. But here is what he wrote up about Quinn. He was his third-ranked quarterback in the 2025 class. He's got Carson Beck and Shedeur Sanders ranked ahead of him, just like Matt Miller in his latest way-too-early mock draft, I should say. And most of the evaluators, that is the case this year. But I think Quinn can leapfrog one or even both of those guys this year. That you really could do that. There's no doubt he has a chance to do that. But he's got to play really well. Okay, so here's what Dane Brugler had to say. Regardless of yours, his feet, body balance, or arm angles, the ball consistently jumps off his hand with effortless zip and control, which allows him to make all the necessary throws. He has a snappy release and can just as easily rip a frozen rope with velocity to the wide side of the field or loft a teardrop over the coverage. There are plenty of examples of users' arm strength on film, but I wanted to highlight his knack for timing and touch when leading receivers downfield. And he's also went on to say must improve section. He said technical refinement. Though he has an impressive arm, uses mechanical inconsistencies will lead to sprays or misfires. At times, sloppy routes by receivers are the culprit as they force choppy footwork and uses drop. But other times, the quarterback relies too much on arm talent and not enough on a sound base or rhythmic delivery. Continued technical refinement should lead to fewer missed throws this upcoming season. That's kind of what Daniel Jeremiah said. That's kind of what we've talked about too. He's got the arm strength, so it can save you when your footwork is not necessarily matched up or aligned with your arm mechanics and your throwing mechanics and your motion and your rhythm. He doesn't really have to do that because the arm is elite. But in the NFL level, that may come back to haunt him. At the college level, he's still so damn good. At the highest level in college, it's still not going to hurt him tremendously. I mean, we've seen that. It's not going to. But if imagine the leap for him if he does start to, marry those different elements of his throwing motion and how good he can be. Because right now he's one of the top second-best quarterback in the country, third-best quarterback in the country right now considered. And everybody's pretty much got the same or similar critiques about the mechanics and the footwork marrying, aligning with the throwing motion and the mechanics. And so you know his people are working on that too. Sark's working on that too.
Yeah, of course.
So, I think Hughes has a friend, had a chance to leapfrog these guys. By the way, Aggies, he's got Connor Wigman as the fourth quarterback in the draft class. So, more and more people are getting – I remember Matt Miller had him drafted in the first round by the Rams, I believe it was. So, people are high on Connor Wigman. Connor Wigman is going to be the second-best quarterback Texas faces next year, potentially.
Potentially.
I mean, Jackson Arnold. No, I don't – I don't know because he hasn't played. He keeps getting hurt. He's only played like seven games in his career, so they're basically extrapolating.
And they have a whole new system, new everything there. So we'll see. But yeah, he has all the potential to be.
He does, and so like I said, he may end up being the second best quarterback Texas faces next year. All right, that is the Dane Brugler breakdown of Quinn Ewers. All right, we come back, we'll get into the topic for the big fat poll of the day. Also, we'll get into the first selection of the musically themed day of the week. All of that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers coming back on the Horn.
Back here on the Rodcast on a Friday morning, and that means it's a 5-1-2 Friday, playing your local music. You can go check out around town this weekend, and this is Jake Andrews. Jake Andrews, one of the better guitar players in town, really, really good guitar player, been around for a long time, playing Saturday at Continental Club. Go check out Jake Andrews, always a good show with Jake. Let's get over to the Big Fat Poll of the Day, 512-447-3776 is the text line number if you want to join the conversation, and we'll get it posted up on X as well at the Horn ATX.
Patrick's Big Fat Poll of the Day on the Horn.
Big Fat Poll of the Day today. We're going to try a new game for the Big Fat Poll of the Day. Rod, are you aware of Start Bench Cut? You ever play Start Bench Cut?
Yes, of course.
So we're going to play Start Bench Cuts, and then on the poll online, we'll say, who do you cut? Because I think that is always the hardest question of a Start Bench Cut a lot of times is, who do you cut? So we're asking, who do you cut? But we're going to go with Dallas Cowboys running backs, because there's, we keep talking about what they're going to do in this offseason, keep reading more things about position groups and where the Cowboys rank in that with their running back core. So we want to look at the Dallas Cowboys running back group and ask you, start, bench, cut, Ezekiel Elliott, Deuce Vaughn, and Rico Dowdle. Start, bench, cut. If you have to get rid of one of them to make room for another running back, who do you start, who do you bench, and who do you cut? Zeke, Deuce Vaughn, Rico Dowdle.
Oh, man. I guess, honestly, you probably should start Rico.
Normally when we play start bench cut, you have three really good players, and it's really hard that you have to cut one of them. This one, it feels like you could cut any one of the three and it wouldn't kill you, but also I'm with you. I have Rico Dowdle starting.
I'll probably bench Zeke, and I'll probably cut Deuce.
And I think I bench Deuce and I cut Zeke, because I think Zeke is much more replaceable type player. I think he is a...
I don't disagree with that.
And I think Rico Rico at least could do more of what Zeke does at this point. And so potential-wise, I'm going to say if I need two running backs to go and I know what one of them is and I don't really know the other two could show up and be special, then I would cut Zeke. But I want to know what you guys think, because I know there's Cowboys fans out there who think that's sacrilege. But they also don't want to cut Rico, and they don't want to cut Deuce. But if you want to bring in another running back at some point, then who do you start, who do you bench, and who do you cut? And then we'll ask you online, who do you cut is our question. Zeke, Deuce Vaughn, Rico Dowdle is the question for the Big Fat Poll today. I, it's you could say you start Zeke because he's got the experience, and then he. I think Rico has to be the guy you start solely in the fact that he is the guy that you've been building as this potential breakout guy, similar to what you did with Tony Pollard. You built him up as to be the guy, and then you put him as a bell cow, and that probably wasn't the best coming off an injury. But at the same point, he's a good running back. He got paid this offseason. So he's you clearly built him up. That's what you've been trying to build up with Rico. I still don't think from what I watched last year, he didn't see holes. He just kind of ran where the hole was supposed to be. And so there wasn't ever that hesitation of seeing, which works at points. When the hole was there, he was really good because he burst through it. But that's not always going to be there. And so if your offensive line doesn't give you that hole, what does Rico Dowdle do? I think Zeke's better at finding it, but the problem is it takes him a little bit longer. He no longer has that burst anymore. So by the time he hits it, he's already getting touched and then can only get a couple more yards. And then Deuce, we just haven't really seen put it together. He had, that one preseason game where everybody thought, steal of the draft, Deuce Vaughn. And then he had two more preseason games where that was no longer the case. Teams game plan for him a little bit more. But he's got another year in the system now. He's been able to change his body up a little bit more for the NFL. They maybe have some more packages they've been able to put together for him and use him in different ways. I think they have to be able to use him this year. I don't think you can afford to have a running back on this roster that you don't use anymore. I don't know if that's a viable way for the Cowboys to go through this season.
Yeah, Cowboys running game is just going to be below average. Like I don't think it's going to be a difference maker for them. It'll largely be symbolic, I think, this year, and it'll just be a Dak centric, CD centric offense.
I think it will be too, but
it'll still be pretty good. But I don't think the running game will make much of a difference.
But I still think what percentage of plays are you running the ball?
They'll still try to maintain some balance, but
yeah.
You can't go with something that's totally ineffective. So I think it'll be complementary to the passing game ultimately, rather than like true balance.
Yeah.
It'll just be there to complement. I mean, unless Rico Dowdle just has a breakout season and we've all, severely underestimated him. And I don't think that's the case. I think he's a good player, but I don't necessarily think he's going to be a great running back for them. And we know what Zeke is. You know what Zeke is. I know what Zeke is.
Yeah.
We don't know what Deuce is. But, I mean, do you want to just bet on Deuce? You should give Deuce a shot, though. You should give Deuce a shot.
I mean, and I think your best possible case scenario is Darren Sproles, who had a good career for a long time, but was definitely never the guy that you were like, Darren Sproles is going to carry us.
No. He was a complimentary boutique player to an already established run game, and that's what Deuce should be. Deuce can't be your main course, running back, like your feature back. He can't be that. So I'm with you. It's a tough game. Right now I'd go with cutting Deuce, and I think I'd bench Zeke, but I could easily flip those. I could flip those two. I could flip them just like you. I cut Zeke. I'm not passionate or adamant one way or the other with those guys, because that's not why the game is essentially the hypothetical here is so tough, because I don't really care either. I don't think either one of those guys is going to end up making a difference for the Cowboys. It's going to be Rico Dowdle. If Rico Dowdle doesn't take a leap this year, that running game is going to be one of the worst in the NFL potentially.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
All right, good stuff there. We'll get into the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day a little bit later on the show. We come back, we'll get into some NFL nuggets. This was a surprising stat I found about the Houston Texans. They got to improve on this, or they will not have the year that everybody is anticipating from C.J. Stroud and from D'Amico Ryan. So we'll get into that. Also, we'll get into Rod's rant of the day. That's a little bit of football theory. There is a concept making a comeback in the NFL, and there are all of these ties to Longhorn players throughout the years. So I want to get into that, too, a little bit later on, and we get to Rod's rant. So all of that and more when we return right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis on Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.